Could you convincingly feign insanity, fool trained doctors, and infiltrate an asylum? This was the audacious challenge journalist Nellie Bly accepted in 1887. Standing before her mirror at night, she practiced the staring eyes, supposedly characteristic of the mentally ill, read ghost stories until dawn to unsettle her mind, and carefully selected old clothing for her disguise. Her mission wasn't merely sensational journalism. It was to expose the rumored abuses within Blackwell's Island Insane Asylum through firsthand experience. What's most striking about Bly's journey is how easily she succeeded. Within days of adopting her persona as Nellie Brown, a confused woman with no memory of her origins, she found herself committed to Blackwell's Island. Her performance wasn't elaborate, just a vacant stare, confused statements about her identity, and expressions of fear about imaginary dangers. Yet doctors, police, and judges all accepted this superficial presentation without question. This raises a disturbing question. If a perfectly sane woman could be institutionalized so easily, how many genuinely confused or distressed, but not insane, individuals might be wrongfully committed? Bly's undercover operation became one of journalism's most consequential investigations, exposing systematic abuses that shocked the nation and catalyzed immediate reforms in mental health care. Bly's insanity diagnosis revealed critical flaws in mental health care. At the temporary home for females, her strange behavior triggered immediate fear, with residents crying, "Get her away from me," and "She's crazy enough to kill us all." Her first taste of mental illness stigma. Police threatened to drag her through the streets if she resisted. Judge Duffy spent just 5 minutes with her before concluding she had been drugged and brought to the city. No medical tests or detailed history were taken. Her well-dressed appearance earned her better treatment than someone shabbier might receive, exposing the system's class biases. The ambulance surgeon's examination was equally superficial, checking only her tongue, pulse, and eyes before diagnosing belladonna use. Her naturally enlarged pupils from nearsightedness were misinterpreted as symptoms, demonstrating how normal variations become pathologized when viewed through a predetermined lens of illness. Most disturbing was how these brief assessments wielded enormous power, stripping away freedom, dignity, and credibility with just a few written words. As you are in a charity place, you cannot expect much else. This callous response when Bly complained about the unbearably cold hall captured the institution's attitude. Charity recipients should be grateful for whatever treatment they received. Life inside Blackwell's Island maximized suffering while minimizing staff effort. Days began at 5:30 a.m. with a harsh awakening. 45 women shared 2 filthy towels and 6 combs. They sat motionless on hard benches from 6 a.m. until 8 p.m., forbidden from talking, moving, or reading. This enforced idleness was perhaps the cruelest aspect, leaving patients alone with their troubled thoughts. The food was deliberately inedible. Cold tea, buttered bread, Bly's contained a spider, paste-like oatmeal, spoiled beef, and bland fish. Patients ate with their fingers, while staff enjoyed proper meals within sight. When Bly requested a nightgown, a nurse coldly stated, "We have not such things in this institution. This is charity, and you should be thankful for what you get." "I've settled the old fool for a while," boasted a nurse after silencing an elderly patient, revealing the routine violence inflicted on asylum women. Bly witnessed attendants tormenting patients until hysterical, then slapping them, knocking their heads against walls, and choking them before dragging them to closets where screams couldn't be heard. When Miss Tilly Mayard suffered a seizure, nurses suggested letting her fall to teach her a lesson. The superintendent's response was pinching her between the eyebrows until her face turned crimson, a treatment causing terrible headaches and worsening her condition. The bath ritual exemplified this cruelty. Bly was forcibly undressed and placed in an ice-cold tub where a deranged woman scrubbed her with soap, covering her face despite pleas. three buckets of freezing water were dumped over her head, leaving her gasping. Not hygiene, but humiliation disguised as care. Most horrifying was how systematic these abuses were. Not occasional misconduct, but standard practice, openly discussed among attendants and either condoned or ignored by administrators. I dreamed of my mother last night. I think she may come today and take me home. This hope, expressed by a woman confined for 4 years, reveals the heartbreaking persistence within asylum walls. Bly observed women gazing at city lights between bars, tantalizingly close, yet impossibly distant. Many patients showed no signs of mental illness beyond the distress of confinement itself. Josephine Despereau, a sane French woman, was committed simply because she fell ill and couldn't communicate in English. When she cried about her situation, attendants choked her severely enough to permanently damage her throat. The asylum operated on a presumption of permanence. Patients weren't expected to recover, but to remain institutionalized indefinitely, influencing everything from cursory examinations to the absence of therapeutic interventions. Most disturbing was the system's circular logic. Protests against confinement were interpreted as evidence of instability, improvements dismissed as temporary, and rational arguments for release seen as manipulation, perfectly validating its own judgments regardless of reality. When Bly was released after 10 days, she felt pained, abandoning her companions to their fate. Many women showing no signs of mental illness beyond the distress of confinement remained trapped in a system designed to keep them there. Her exposé in the New York World shocked the public and prompted immediate investigation. When the grand jury visited Blackwell's Island, they found the institution clearly staged. Spotless kitchen with conspicuous salt barrels, beautiful white bread unlike patients' usual fare, improved beds, and new washing basins replacing old buckets. Most tellingly, every patient Bly mentioned in her exposé had been moved, discharged, or transferred. If her judgments about these patients' sanity were wrong, why hide them? Despite obvious cover-up attempts, the grand jury sustained her claims. Their report recommended all her proposed changes, with the Appropriation Committee providing an unprecedented $1 million for the insane, a staggering sum in 1887. Bly's investigation proves the power of firsthand experience in revealing truths that official reports miss. By living among asylum patients rather than merely interviewing them, she exposed an entire dehumanizing system, not just isolated abuses. Her work transformed mental health care understanding, showing the system hadn't simply failed its therapeutic mission, it had abandoned it entirely, merely warehousing society's unwanted beneath a thin medical veneer. She revealed the sane versus insane distinction was far more arbitrary than believed. Many women showed no mental illness signs but were trapped in a system that interpreted all behavior through a pathological lens. Bly's 10 days demonstrated that true insanity often resides in systems prioritizing control over care, efficiency over dignity, and institutional convenience over human needs. Her courage sparked not just reform, but a fundamental rethinking of society's approach to mental illness, creating a legacy that still resonates today.